Rupert Guinness, and with me on the line from the United States of America is my co-host Aaron S. Lee. This is the first show for 2016. Happy New Year to all of you out there. What a ride. It's the show about bikes, riding, cycling. I said all three things at once, didn't I? One sport. We've got swimming and running, anything that tickles your fancy. It's a show which is brought to you by Australian Broadcasting Media on Radio Sydney FM, on digital and on FM, all around the world, not just in Australia. But it's going to be a really exciting year this year. The summer of cycling has already got underway. But before we look ahead, we should talk to Aaron. He's been over in the United States for some months now. Aaron, welcome back, mate, and it's great to hear your voice. Happy New Year, mate.
Oh, Happy New Year to you too, Rube. It's been too long, mate. We've been on sabbatical for a couple of months now following the World Championships. But it's been a very interesting off season to what was a pretty good year of cycling in 2015.
Yeah, I thought it was. I thought, you know, there's a lot of controversy, as you always do get in cycling, but there's a lot of drama and some new faces sort of rose their head, and I think we've seen a changing of a guard in some of the areas. And from an Australian point of view, some really good young talent coming through. But like you said, the World Championships were a fantastic event, weren't they? And the World Road Championships over in Richmond in Virginia there. To tell us, Aaron, what was the sort of the vibe there in the States? Because obviously the NFL season was on at the same time. And I mean, cycling isn't a major sport. But what sort of vibes did you get about the cycling year in the US?
Well, you know, the cycling, you're right, Rube. You know, the cycling plays, it's pretty far down on the ladder, so to speak, in the hierarchy of sports. Obviously, the gridiron football, the American football, NFL season, which is just wrapping up this past weekend, heading into the playoffs. It doesn't have the popularity it once had, especially during those years where one Lance Armstrong, won seven Tour de France titles before they were obviously stripped away. Cycling had hit its high point at that time, and it hasn't really rebounded in popularity. I think one of the problems that plagues cycling in the U.S. is just a real lack of a grassroots program, which are things that I think Down Under does quite well. I think Australia has such a phenomenal grassroots program, starting with BMX, moving into mountain biking, the track program, and then obviously into the road for those who wish to go that route. But that said, I think the U.S. was quite happy to host the World Championships, to bring a lot of the European, the great European riders that we see each and every day on the cycling news websites around the world. And we see, obviously, on stations such as Eurosport and SBS back in Australia as well. I think there was a lot more interest in the sport. I think it actually, to be quite honest, I think the World Championships helped elevate races such as California, helped elevate races like Colorado and Utah, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, no, those races you spoke of, they're not easy races either, are they? They're high altitude, and for a lot of the European guys who go over to race in Utah and in Colorado, you know, at the tail end of a season, it can be pretty hard for them. But it's a great experience for the American guys there to sort of try and get a measure over the bigger name Euro guys, and to perhaps put their names forward for contracts in the future.
No, absolutely. One guy that I'm really interested in is a young American by the name of Kiel Regnan. He was actually riding for United Healthcare. He has recently signed a contract. He'll be racing with Trek this year. I do not believe, I'm not 100% sure, because I haven't seen the final roster for the Tour Down Under squad that Trek will be fielding this year. I'm not sure if he'll be heading down that way or not, but he's a great young kid. He's won the Philadelphia Classic. He's one to watch for sure, and we need guys like him. We need Keogh. We need some of those guys. We need guys like TJ Van Garder at BMC to continue his progress, hopefully, of being that great GC rider. So it'll be very interesting this year to see how that pans out with the new addition, one Richie Porte. But we need a hero here in the U.S., Rube.
Yeah, well, it's going to be very interesting to see how TJ fits in with Richie or vice versa. Speaking of which, You know, we've got an interview, two-part interview in this show with Richie Porte, where I spoke to him, albeit a little while ago. It was just before his wedding. But certainly he was talking, one, about the Tour de France route for next year. And in the second part of the interview, we spoke to him about, you know, the life after Sky, how he's going to fit into BMC and how him and TJ are going to work together. But, you know, as you know, Aaron, the summer of cycling down here has already got underway with the Mitchelton Winery Bay Criterium Series down in Geelong. And a young gun, Caleb Ewan, he won the series and he won three of the four rounds again. So he's going into the national championships down in Buninyong, Victoria this weekend, obviously with a big target on his back again. I mean, you were there last year, Aaron. You saw Caleb go into the nationals with the same amount of expectation, but he's a year older and a year wiser and a year stronger.
What a great story, Roop, with Caleb. And it's very exciting. And obviously, you mentioned he won three of the four stages at the Bay Classic. Well, this is his third year in a row. Am I right there in saying that he's won that race?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Is it his third or is it his fourth? What is it? I mean, I can't remember now.
Don't put the bar too high up. You're gonna have listeners will come in and criticize us for getting it wrong. He's the defending champion.
Yeah, exactly. He's become quite a fixture there. But what I love about Caleb is that, especially I had a real great opportunity last year to cover a lot of his races in Lake Cowie, in Korea, in Turkey, and I actually had a chance to see him mature over those first 6 months of the season. Now, you recall you and I chatting with Matty White last year, and he said that basically they had an expectation of five or so wins for the season. Well, Caleb nailed those wins en route to earning 11 for the season. He captured about five of those in the first 6 weeks of the season. Now, talking to Matt White the other day for a story I was doing for Michael Matthews, one of Caleb's fellow Australians and obviously Orca Green Edge teammates, I asked Matty how many did he expect this year, and the total actually didn't change, Rube, but he still expects about five or six races from Caleb this year, but this year he wants five or six World Tour races like the one he got on stage five at the Vuelta last year. And of course, I might be wrong on that stage as well, but like you said, we'll hear from that.
Yeah, well, you're right with that. He got a stage win in the welter anyway, but I think you're right. I think the important thing for this year was that he got some wins, but he was in races which were up to his level. He wasn't racing beyond his level. At the same time, I know Whitey said to me that he also, the important thing was for Caleb to get through the year, and there would be periods in the year where he'd be struggling and finding it tough, which he did do, but certainly he came out at the end of it pretty strong. But Aaron, we're going to talk about the Australian Championships. So you said Richie Porte, little flashback to the rest of the year, but let's just get our breath back again first, Aaron, because we haven't spoken to each other for a while. I need a little bit of a breather here. I think you do. You're getting a little bit old these days, and you haven't got so much hair. Oh, sorry, you haven't got any hair. Anyway, let's just have a little bit of a listen to some nice music, a nice selection of yours, Aaron, and we'll come back after the break. You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee.
Traveling in a freighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? A women go and men wonder. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better take cover. I said, do you speak my language? He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, I come from a land down under. Peter's slow and mentioned her. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run. much to say. I said to the man, are you trying to tempt me? Because I come from the land of plenty.
Rupert Guinness, and with me on the phone from the United States is my co-host, Howard S. Lee. Howard, that was a nice little bit of music you just chose there. You haven't lost your touch, mate.
Oh, mate, you know, when you're living in New Orleans here, which is one of the real music capitals, real meccas of the world, I got to tell you, it's in my blood, man.
Now, listen, we're talking about the summer of cycling, and I know we're talking about Caleb Ewan, but Gracie Elvin, she won the women's series. She did it again. She was actually saying she was hoping to go under the radar a bit leading into the national championships, you know, but I don't think she's done that. But I think, as you know, Aaron, anyone who's seen Gracie Elvin race, you'll never let her go under the radar, eh?
Well, not at all, considering that she has two national titles to her name. She really knows how to turn it on in the month of January, doesn't she?
Oh, she certainly does, and just such a strong rider. And the road course, which the women's race this year, by the way, will be held on the Sunday before the men's race on the Sunday afternoon. They switched it from Saturday to Sunday, and so this way it's going to get on television live as well as the men's race, which is a great thing. But that course is a very, very strong course, or hard course. It requires a strong rider to win it. Hence, Gracie's won it. You know, we've seen past men's winners. You know, like, you know, got to help me out here. I'm going to have a brain explosion. Last year's...
You know, Heinrich Hausmann won it last year, obviously, for the men. And of course, you know, I think when I think about the last 2 years of that course, I keep thinking about one Darren Lapthorne, who obviously just announced about a week ago, I think, that he's retiring. He's calling it a career. At just 32 years of age, and of course we all know him as Lappers, and he won the national title back in 2007, and what looked at the time to be one promising career. He did go on and had a very solid Palmares. Obviously, he took a year off there around 2008. There was a much publicized story and a tragedy regarding his sister backpacking in Europe, which I think. From what I understand, I didn't have a chance to know Darren prior to that, but I know from those that did said that he never quite came back as the same rider, which you can completely understand. But one thing he always did was show an amazing amount of class. And over the past 2 years on that course, a real gutsy effort in the last two laps and an attack, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, he's certainly given it all. And, you know, we wish him well in his retirement. And I think a lot of people, you know, they've got a lot of respect for Darren. And I don't know, from the media, he's always been, you know, easy to talk to, very accessible. And he's been, you know, he's provided some great insights into the racing. But actually, another guy I just spoke to before we went on air, a man of iron, the man of steel, I should say, Steel von Hoff, who won the Criterium Championship last year. He actually got one over Caleb Ewan, remember that? And then he came ninth in the road race to manage to get into the UniSA team for the Tour Down Under. I spoke to him this morning. He's pretty excited about the championships again. You know, he hasn't done so much climbing as he had done this time last year, but he's pretty keen to not just try and defend his Criterium Championship, even though he says Caleb Ewan will be the favourite, but he also wants to give it a real crack for that national champions jersey. jersey in the road race.
Well, I look forward to hearing that because I'm a huge fan of Steel Von Hall. He comes from that Andrew Christie Johnston learning tree, so to speak, with the Avanti program.
That's right. And
he's a two-time defending National Criterion champion. Won it in 2014. I think he shocked a lot of people in 2014. And I think last year his goal was to prove that it was no fluke. And he did just that. And as you said, beat a solid crowd, including the reigning under 23 champion, which was Caleb Ewan, as you mentioned.
That's right, and in the Bay, Chris, he's been, you know, obviously riding with the Avanti team, but his official team now is on the new One team, the Pro Conti team. So he's pretty excited about the season ahead for them. They're going to do he's going to do the Cadel Evans Road Race and the Herald Sun Tour, then head over to Belgium to do some of the early classics. But certainly, I think you'll probably see still hovering around near those Avanti guys in the Criterium, because they'll be up against the Orica Green Edge to try who will be riding for Caleb, but also for the road race. And we remember last year.
When it comes to the national championships in Australia and that course there in Buninyong, is it a winnable race for someone outside of Orica Green Edge? Obviously, Heinrich Hassel proved last year that it can be done, but the odds have to favor a team like Orica, or even perhaps maybe a team like Drive Pack or Avanti, where the teams actually have an impressive number of riders on hand. And it's obviously not just a sprinter's course either.
No, definitely not. I tell you someone who I'd love to see win it, and Pat Shaw, the aging grandfather of the Avanti team. He's not that old, but he's a wise old head, and he got a great win at Port Arlington in the Bay Criterium Series. And if anyone deserved a win in his career, it was Pat Shaw. He's really got a wise head, and he knows how to read a race well. And he's in very, very good form. The Port Arlington course is the hardest of the four circuits, and albeit it's a big difference between a Criterium and the road race. But you know what? He's got the street smarts to know which wheels to follow and everything, but I reckon we'll see Pat Shaw certainly have a say in that road race.
Hey, Rube, wasn't he talking about retirement like 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, it was a bit like me talking about retirement or, you know, change of lifestyle 2 or 3 years ago.
Fantastic, Jake.
Yeah, he did. He did. But Lesh, I'll tell you what. We'll come back very shortly. We're going to take another short break. A little bit more of a word of the national championships. But before we go too far ahead, as well, just going to ask you. And I'll come back, give you a few minutes of reflection here, Aaron. I'll give you at least a bit of a chance to think about 2:15 and a couple of the highs and lows. And I'll just throw the questions at you. You've got to give me quick answers. But you've got a few minutes now just to think about it. But first up, pick another selection of your fine music, and we'll get back to you soon after the break. welcome back to What a Ride. I'm Rupert Guinness, and with me on the line from the United States is my co-host Aaron S. Lee. So listen, I was talking about 215. I can't let go, as you know. I like to hold on. I'm a bit of a hoarder of memories as much as junk. So, I wanted to ask you about 215, but I understand now you want to ask me. So at least I'll hand the toy to you.
I do, Ruth, because obviously you wrote a very engaging and interesting piece to the start of the year for the Sydney Morning Herald, and you cover a lot of what happened in 2015, both on and off the bike. And I want to go first and foremost with what you believe was the true story of the year.
Well, you know, I mean, I've got to tell you, it was really hard to actually go over the whole year. That's the thing. I mean, this piece I wrote for the Sydney Morning Herald was, it took forever and a day because it was just, just trying to remember all the things that happened to start with was hard. And then secondly, to pick one of the various items that I highlighted there. So, I mean, I guess I found the story of the day was the Chris Froome scrutiny, the scrutiny on the, questioning over the legitimacy of his performances. There's been following him ever since he won it firstly in 2013. And this year, you know, he got, a heap of scrutiny during the tour. And then after the tour, he underwent independent testing and then he released the data that was published in Esquire magazine. And he also released selected data from 2007 when he was, racing at the UCI's World Cycling Centre. Comparative data, and as you'd expect, a lot of people applauded him for it and accepted the data, and as you probably not surprised, there are others who are skeptical about it. So this story seems to be continuing on. You wonder how long it will actually last for, but it's I just found it was just an all-consuming story of the year.
How does this play into Chris Froome's mindset moving into 2016?
Oh, look, I think, as he said during the tour, when he thought he had done enough to allay the suspicions of him, what more can I do? He said then, with everything. And so he did more. And I think now he's going to have to just focus on preparing and training for the tour. I mean, he will probably be expecting more questions about it, but you've got to wonder, how much longer. I don't think he will allow himself to be bogged down in it. I think he'll feel, he's probably quite exhausted from having produced everything he has so far, but he's going to have to just refocus and just look ahead.
Absolutely. From my side looking at it, I think that a story that they kind of wrote later on in the year, and that the ASO and the UCI, they just seem to not be playing well together at the moment. It's never been a beautiful, harmonious relationship. But any thoughts that you have on their pulling their races, which include the Grand Tours and a few of the key classics, out of the World Tour?
Well, Aaron, this issue between ASO and the UCI, it's like a tug of war, but it's been going on for years, really. Certainly, if AOC, the organisers of the Tour de France, were to take all their, their races have been taken from the World Tour for 2017 on, that really does take the guts out of the World Tour, or certainly the legitimacy of it. That was a tongue twister. But you certainly hope that common sense will prevail. That's a cliche, I know, but, somewhere between the two, there's got to be some agreement made, because both sides need each other, really. And, if the Tour de France, though, were not to have the top teams in it, that would take some of the luster out of it. And I know the Tour de France organisers want to be able to have, five wild cards now, and you sort of wonder, shouldn't the Tour be for the best teams? I still find it a mixed bag of reasoning from both sides in this one, and unfortunately this is going to be an issue that's going to continue on into 2016, which we're already at.
Well, was there any one story, any bit of controversy that really caught your eye?
Oh, look, the issue of rider safety, there was a lot of, cars, motor vehicles, even riders didn't do themselves any justice by, trying to dodge, in Paris-Roubaix, the railway crossing barrier when it came down as a TGV came across. But, we saw cars, motorbikes, hitting riders during races. I think that's getting a little bit out of hand now. From a controversy, from an Australian point of view, I guess you can't ignore the fractured relationship between Simon Gerrans and Michael Matthews on the Orica Green Edge / and Australian team, which came to the fore in the World Championships, where Matthews got second and Gerrans got sixth. They were both told they can ride for themselves. That was the team instructions by the team national sports director, Brad McGee. Whether it was the right instructions or not, Peter Sagan, he clinched a magnificent win. I don't know whether anybody would have been able to beat him anyway. But certainly it's clear that while Gerrans and Matthews are teammates, they're not the best of mates. But they're both professionals. They'll move on with it. You don't always have to be the best of mates to be in the same team as someone. But certainly you don't want the two, riding, being in a situation to the detriment of each other. This year you'll see them probably only racing together, I think, in one of the spring classics in the Ardennes, and then they'll get together again in the Tour de France.
Well, I'll tell you, I had a chance to talk with Michael with Blaine maybe 2 weeks ago, and I asked him, was there anything he'd do differently from the race in Richmond? And he said the biggest thing was that Sagan has a tendency to attack, but reel in the attack. They reel him in, and that he should have joined Sagan on that final attack, and that's where he made the mistake. He thought it was an issue of timing. He said he thought he'd be reeled back in and he'd have another go. Obviously, that didn't pan out. He said that he felt like the way his legs were feeling in that race and in the lead up going into the race, that he had the legs to beat him in a sprint.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm sure if he was with him there, he could have been it. So maybe it's just a question of timing, that's an opportunity that's come and gone now, so he's going to have to sort of learn from it. But, Michael will get opportunities up ahead, I'm not so sure about Simon Gerrans, but certainly Michael will get his chances. And so long as he learns from this experience, I think that's the most important thing.
Well, I think next year, in talking to him, it looks like the course next year, not quite as favorable for Matthews. It's a flatter course, but there might be some interest. He talked about having some interest for the Rio course, for the Olympics. He said the AOC has contacted him. He hasn't had a chance to really review that course yet, but he'll be looking at it and seeing if it is something that he needs to mix into his schedule.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of riders who are keen about the Rio course, one of whom is, we spoke about him earlier in the show, Richie Porte, who's going to be riding for BMC as of this week. Well, he is now officially a BMC rider after leaving Sky. Actually, you mentioned about that season review. I actually had one of Richie's quotes as my quote of the year, because remember during the tour he was the victim of a punch from one of the spectators on the side of the road, and I remember him saying, "I don't think I deserve to be punched just for doing my job." End of quote. I thought, wow, that's, the riders go through a hell of a lot during a day in the tour, and they, as we saw this year, they got spat on. We've seen for years that they get, incredibly close to the riders and sometimes too close, but the riders accept that's part of one of the unique natures of the elements of the sport. But, to be punched by a spectator, that's just not on. And I sort of really felt for Richie that day when he said that. He said it more out of dismay, rather than anything, that, what do they do to deserve to be punched? I mean, it's a physical assault for starters, but secondly, you can imagine when you're racing up a mountain and you're on the rivet, and then suddenly someone whacks you in the back or in the ribs. That's just not on.
No, it's not. Rip, I got to ask you as a follow up to that: do you think that you've ever deserved to be punched for doing your job?
Oh, probably too many times, I'd say, but fortunately, I've avoided it.
Social media is a bit crazy. Are you still, just personally asking, are you still off the Twitter?
Yeah, look, I'm still lurking, but I'm not sort of doing a public engagement at the moment with the Twitter. Still on a spell. It's just over a year and probably 3 or 4 months now. But, I still have reservations now about, I know that the Twitter is useful in a lot of positive ways, but there's a lot of hate out there as well, and I just needed a break from it. It's just something which, my life is a lot more calmer now, and There's a lot of very interesting people out there who I do tweet with on direct messaging. So there's interesting things out there, but I certainly think that it can get out of order. It can get people can get carried away, and people can also be very vindictive and cowardly on the Twitter. So I think there's certain things in life you could control, and I can control how much I want to engage on it or not.
And of course, no one draws out a social media storm better than Lance Armstrong.
No, that's right. Well, we saw his return to the Tour de France this year, didn't we? And I had that down as my social media storm of the year, primarily because anything that Armstrong does tweet creates a media storm anyway, whether you know he likes it or not, whether anybody likes it or not. But certainly his decision to come on the Tour as part of a charity ride that was organised by the former English footballer Geoff Thomas created a lot of debate. But I would say I reckon most of it was protest about it, about the common sense of him turning up at the Tour. But he did for a couple of days. He came and went. It did create a storm, his attention or his presence. He came and went, and then the race, you know, everyone refocused back on the race. But I didn't actually go out and see him at the site because he did say he was not doing any media. Well, I suddenly saw a whole bunch of media out there chasing him. So, you know, he still likes the attention. He might have missed it. He might have had legitimate cause to go and help a charity as well. I don't know. I haven't spoken to him for a long, long time. But I certainly believe it was, you know, I was more against him going out there to do it than for it, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Well, was there one ride this year that really impressed you?
Oh, look, there were a lot of them, but I think Fabio Aru's ride on the 20th stage, the penultimate stage of the Vuelta, he didn't win it, but he managed to, you know, drop, or he and his Astana team managed to drop Tom Dumoulin. And he overtook the, you know, he got back the race lead. And I just felt that it really showed a lot of assuredness and a maturity by Aru that was lacking in the Giro d'Italia when he was hoping to win it. And he got, you know, he got smacked down by the eventual winner, Alberto Contador. Okay, Aru ended up winning two stages in the mountains near the end of the Giro, but by then Contador had the Giro wrapped up. But in this instance, at the end of the year, Aru had to produce a performance. He had to calculate it. He had to strategize, he and his team, and he had to do it with purpose. And I felt that he really showed a lot of purpose in clinching that Vuelta ride on that, clinching the Vuelta on the penultimate stage there.
Bringing it closer to home, was there any rides in Australia that really kind of caught your attention?
Well, being a former rower, there was one particular ride by Drew Ginn, the former rower himself, three times Olympic gold medalist, and he did the 24-hour, he made an attempt for the world 24-hour record. He got the Australian record of 836.36 kilometres riding around the Brunswick Velodrome. It's an open velodrome in Melbourne, 24 hours, and it was a fabulous performance. I mean, I don't know whether it'd be a spectator sport because there's a lot of time to kill, but certainly you got to give it to Drew Ginn for his determination, his preparation he put behind it, and he as also he did it for charity. So I mean, that was really a magnificent ride by Drew, and anybody who knows Drew, you know, he's a super guy, very modest, humble bloke, but he's certainly got that ticker in him. That rower's ticker is still ticking very nicely.
What about you know, as far as the race of the year, was there one particular race that really stood out to you as the one that really lived up to the hype and maybe even over exceeded its expectations?
Well, I thought the Gent-Wevelgem, the Belgian Classic, one-day classic, that was in at the end of March. I mean, the conditions were horrendous there. We saw the rain and the wind. I mean, we saw riders literally blown off, you know, into the canals on the side of the road. You know, Geraint Thomas had a horrendous crash, you know. And, you know, at the end of the day, there was a seven-man break that managed to survive and be up front. And Luca Paolini, the Italian, he won the race. But, I mean, you know, it was just remarkable to see those harsh conditions. And you thought, you think of other conditions, other sports where competition's cancelled because of the rain or because of the wind or whatever, and here they had everything in this race and they still competed with it. You know, they got to the end, albeit there was discussion early in the year and even later in the year about whether the UCI should be enforcing stricter condition laws, you know, as to whether riders, when there's a race when a condition's too harsh to compete in. And certainly this was one event where that debate eventuated from the outcome. But it still was a magnificent race. I'll tell you another race I did actually also really like. It was an early season race, the Kill 11's Great Ocean Road Race, the first one. They had myriad conditions there, and it was a very tough, hard race, but not too long, but challenging enough for the peloton to really race aggressively and produce a good result.
Geelong hosts, it's an excellent location to host any sporting event. We've seen in the past with the World Championships and the Ironman 70.3, it continues to do a great job. That city loves its endurance sports and loves its cycling, and Victoria really shows up on the roads to support it.
Yeah, exactly. And so then, that was pretty much I feel like I've just gone through it all again now. I mean, I'm exhausted now, and we're only in the first week of January in 2016.
When you look at 2016, is there any one thing that you feel like you want to throw out there as a prediction?
Well, I made three predictions. I said Chris Froome won't win the Tour. I think Nairo Quintana from Colombia will actually learn that you can't wait till the last mountain stage to try and win the Tour. I think he'll, especially against Froome, he'll have to move earlier. So I think he'll learn, and he'll show that he has learned and win the Tour this year. Peter Sagan, the world champion, I reckon he'll win Milan-San Remo. That's got so close to him before, but I think he'll get it this year. And when you talk about Olympics, I'm going to say, well, for the road race, I reckon Lizzie Armitstead from Britain, who was one of my top two riders of the year in this whole season with Sagan for 2:15. I reckon she'll get up and win the Olympics. But from an Australian point of view, Anna Mears for another gold medal in the sprint, or the Kieran, or maybe both. And what about Caroline Buchanan in BMX? She's going to get... I think she'll be up there for the gold this year. She was disappointed with her last Olympics, but I think we all know Caroline, and she's a super champion, and she will come back stronger for her disappointment back in London in 2012.
Oh, I'd love to see her, cap off her BMX career. Obviously still an extremely young athlete, mid-20s. I'd love to see her, take it to that next level, capture the gold that she missed out on in London. And I'd love to see her move to the Velodrome next, Ruth.
Hey, that would be cool. I mean, have you got some mail on that, or some knowledge that I haven't got?
I'm going to leave it at that as we go to a commercial break.
Yeah, look, I need to get my breath back again too. So we will leave everybody hanging on that one, and let's take a break, and we'll come back after a little bit of music, and I'll come back with a fresher voice, and we'll continue this great chat. You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee.
Waking up to ash and dust, I wipe my brow and I sweat.
Welcome back to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. Now, we've mentioned this guy a few times already in the show, so you better put him up. Our special guest, Richie Port. He was been riding for the Sky Team as the wingman for two times Tour de France winning Chris Froome, but now he's moved to BMC. As everyone said, it was the worst kept secret of the 2015 season, his move to BMC. But it's finally happened, and he's going to be racing in BMC colours for the first time at the Australian Road Championships down in Buninyong, Victoria. Now, as I said, I caught up with Richie just before his wedding, and about, you know, his move, and also about the Tour de France route that was announced for next year. So I thought we'd just, first off, in this two-part interview, let's have a listen to what Richie had to say about this year's Tour de France. Gosh, it's already upon us. The 2016 Tour de France, in which he will be the co-leader of the BMC team with TJ Van Garderen. And it's worth reminding you that this will be the first time Richie has ever got to lead a team in the Tour de France, or co-lead a team. He had a crack at the Giro last year with Sky, but he crashed out, and he had to pull out because of injuries from crashes and various other problems that happened along the way. So this will be the big time for Richie, the big opportunity. But first up, let's just have a listen to see what Richie thinks about this year's Tour de France route. Welcome back to What a Ride, and I'm Rupert Guinness, and a very special guest with me now on the line from Yorkshire, en route to Lancashire for a big day of his, is Richie Port, who was riding for the Sky Team, and next year he's going to be joining BMC. But just this week we've heard the new Tour de France route for 2016 has been announced, and Richie, have you had a chance to sort of look at the route and see how it feels for you?
Yeah, they route. I mean, I've had a quick look at it. A couple of time trials in there. Looks like a Mont Ventoux, and then a time trial. So that looks quite good. And then there's a few climbs. You know, sort of five days, I think, of climbs that aren't really that well known. So it'd be nice to go and have a look at those and see how they are next year.
Yeah, I guess that's going to mean you'll have to do a, you know, carefully plan your season and incorporate some pretty thorough reconnaissance.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a stage down in Andorra, which is not really that far from where. So I'm sure I'll go down and have a look at that. Mont Ventoux is also, you know, on the way. I know that one quite well, but, you know, it's one of those climbs that you can never know too well.
Yeah. Hey, Rich, I'm interested, like, you know, that the first of those two time trials you mentioned is the day after Mont Ventoux. Is that going to be really hard to sort of strategize? You know, I mean, Ventoux is so hard anyway, and the race can be so fast and aggressive there, but at the same time, you could blow all your biscuits for the time trial. Do you think that's going to come into factor, or do you think that riders will just take it, you know, race the day as it comes and then see what they've got left in for the next day?
Yeah, like, it's day by day, really. I think, you know, somebody like Quintana is probably going to go, full gas. Like, that's how he goes all the time anyhow. But I don't think, I think he's got to take some time on that stage before the time trial, you know, to beat somebody like Froome. So for me personally, I don't think I'd be holding anything back. It's fun to... You can, just as well lose as much time on that as in a time trial anyhow.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, you know, when opportunities arise, you've got to take them. And that leads me to my next question, Richie, with, this year's Tour. I guess in the first week, we haven't got all the hazards that we've had in the last couple of years of pavé, cobblestones and or street furniture. But still, the first week of any Tour, as you know, is pretty tense and frenetic. Are you happy that there isn't pavé and the street furniture that we've had in Holland and in Belgium over the last couple of years?
Yeah, for sure. But then there's this other thing called crosswinds, which to me are probably just as bad. You don't need much crosswind for it to feel like you're going over a pavé section with plenty of road traffic thrown in there. It's probably one of the most treacherous things you can do is, you know, starting where the Tour does start next year. Any time I've ever raced there, there's always crosswinds. So I think, you know, the organisers kind of like that stress in the first week, and they're going to get it next year anyhow with some of the roads that we are going to go go along.
Well, one of the, you know, the team you've got, BMC, for next year, I mean, they are a very strong team in being able to protect their leaders. They've done it with TJ Van Garderen in the past and also Cadel Evans, and good, strong strapping riders there, which I'm sure will be selected for that area, that for that part of the race. Speaking of that, though, are you you a bit disappointed there wasn't a team time trial in this year's tour, because BMC are a top-class unit for that?
Yeah, I think it was kind of expected that, you know, we probably weren't going to have a team time trial next year. But for me, you know, moving over from Sky to BMC, where they do put so much emphasis on time trialing, it's, you know, I'm excited. I know I can time trial. I just don't feel that I've been able to do a good time trial, other than Cold Airs, which is uphill in Paris this year, and then Aussie Nationals, which was at the start of the year. So for me, I'm sort of excited to be, you know, really working on that role with Alan Piper going into next year. So I think, yeah, it will suit me.
Yeah, well, it's pretty exciting, and in a few minutes we'll talk about that with your change with BMC. But for the route this year, for next year, I mean, it's going to be a anti-clockwise route through the Pyrenees and then across to the Alps and the Jura, and also we've got this stop into Switzerland. Do you prefer an anti-clockwise or a clockwise route?
Yeah, well, it's actually strange that I don't think they usually do 2 years anti-clockwise normally. I mean, this year we did it anti-clockwise as well. We did the Pyrenees first and then into the Alps. But and normally I'd prefer the Alps, but this year, you know, the Pyrenees were quite good. But, you know, it's always exciting when you hit the Pyrenees first. I think it's totally different climb than what the Alps are. It's a little bit steeper and, you know, they're long as well. So I think it's going to put, you know, GC could be quite shaken up by the time we come out of the Pyrenees.
Yeah. I think, are you happy with the balance of summit finishes? And I know in the tour route there are more mountains than last year, I think three or four more mountains, but are you happy with, I think it's four summit finishes? Is that a good balance for you?
Yeah, for sure. I think it is. You know, four's quite, you know, obviously there's other hard stages without a summit finish, but I think for me as a climber next year, yeah, the tour is quite a nice race.
Yeah. Now, I guess we've heard Chris Froome, your ex-teammate, well, I guess as soon as the calendar switches over to 2016, your ex-teammate, he feels that it's a better route than last year's for him. Would you agree with that, and do you think it's a better route for you than last year, or this year, I should say?
Yeah, 100%. I think the organisers tried to make it as hard as they could for Chris Froome this year with, you know, no long time trial. But, you know, we saw that Froome is, you know, he's the general classification rider of his generation. I think he's the man to beat. So if he's happy with it, then, you know, he's going to be hard to beat. But, you know, certainly from my point of view, you know, this year in the Tour wasn't really my race to target. So I'm just looking forward to being able to target the race. Firstly, and you know, I'm excited for that.
Yeah, it's exciting times. Well, I'm talking with Richie Port here from the... Well, he will be joining the BMC team next year. This is his last year with Sky. We're going to take a quick little break, listen to some good music, and then if Richie can just stay on the line, and then we'll come back to you in a minute.
Straight. She turns herself.
Welcome back to What a Ride. I'm Rupert Guinness with my co-host, partner in crime, Aaron S. Lee. Well, Aaron, we just heard Richie talk about the Tour de France route. It's almost pretty exciting when you hear him talk about the parts he likes, the concerns, because, you know, he's talking now as a leader or a co-leader of the team rather than being the guy who can help Chris Froome. So he has to look at this course for his own purposes, his own gain and benefit. What did you make of that?
Well, Rube, the first question I take from there is, how do you really successfully co-lead a team in a race of that magnitude? Now, I know it's been done throughout the last 100 years, and you've had an opportunity to cover about three decades of those. So I want to hear it from you. How many times does that formula, does that strategy work? And can TJ and Richie Port coexist in that role, especially when considering TJ has tasted the top five twice, and Richie is looking to get in that podium spot and challenge for GC? Is this a match made in heaven or a disaster waiting to happen?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, certainly it's not easy. That's for sure. I mean, you reflect back on Bernard Hinault and Greg LeMond. You know, we saw their sort of internal struggles that they had, but they managed to. You know, I guess Hinault got one Tour win, and then so did LeMond the next year in '86, '85, and '86. Hinault and then LeMond, and they were teammates. A fractured relationship, certainly that was, and even more currently, I guess we've seen with Movistar, Quintana and Alejandro Valverde, but saying that, they got second and third, didn't they? They didn't get the win, but I guess it showed that they can be up there, I think. But we saw last year that Movistar perhaps should have been more aggressive earlier in the race. So to answer your question, yeah, it's going to be a delicate situation, I think, Aaron. I think certainly Jim Okowitz would have, the manager of BMC, you know, he's spoken to both those riders, and those riders have spoken to each other about how they're going to manage it. But as we know, it's easy to say one thing, and it's in the heat of competition that all the bonhomie gets challenged or tested at the very least. The old cliche, the course will decide. That will happen. I mean, one thing about these two riders, Van Garder and Port, they both believe they haven't produced their best yet. As you said, Van Garder's twice fifth. Richie, his best in the Grand Tour, goes back to his debut in the Giro in 2010, where he got seventh, but he's yet to produce a solid 3 weeks for his own purpose since. So I think, a lot of unanswered questions, Aaron, but I tell you what, enough of listening to my excuse, or my reason, sorry. Let's listen to the man himself, Richie Port, in the second part of the interview, because we spoke a bit about that, and also about, you know, life after Sky, and what's it going to be like at BMC, as you said, with TJ Van Garderen, and also what are going to be some of the challenges ahead. And Richie also talks a little bit about the Olympics as well, which obviously is coming up straight after the Olympic, after the Tour de France. So obviously that has an impact on training and preparation. So first up, let's just take a little bit of, listen to a bit of music first, and then we'll come back and we'll all gather around the fire and sing Kumbaya, and then we'll lead into Richie Port's second part of his interview.
We're caught in a trap, I can't walk out, because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me? When you don't believe a word I say, we can go on together with suspicious minds, and we can build our dreams on suspicious minds. You're an old friend, I know.
You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and my co-host Aaron S. Lee. But we're going to give you a breather. You're not going to listen to us. We're going to go straight to part two of the Richie Port interview, where he talks about life after Sky with BMC, the future 2016, Van Garderen, TJ Van Garderen, his teammate, Tour de France and the Olympics. Let's have a listen. Welcome back to What a Ride. I'm Rupert Guinness, and with me is our special guest, Australian cyclist Richie Port, who has been riding for the Sky team, but next year he's going to be joining BMC. We've been talking with Richie about the Tour de France route that's just been announced for next year, but Richie, I'd love to talk to you briefly about your move to BMC, how it came about, and how excited are you about the future ahead?
It came about before the tour. It was kind of the worst kept secret, I think, of professional cycling, was that I am leaving Sky at the end of the year. But for me, it's a massive opportunity. I think I've spent 4 years in Sky, which have been brilliant, and I've really enjoyed most of my time there. I've been part of three Tour de France winning teams, which doesn't really happen very often. So then the opportunity to go out and try for myself, I'm not saying that I'm going to come win the Tour or whatever, but I feel that I need to give myself the opportunity. I've ridden so many years in support of other stars, I guess, like Bradley Wiggins and Chris Froome, Contador, all these guys. So I think winning races like Paris-Nice and Catalonia this year have shown me that I do need to take the opportunity for myself, at least give myself the chance to see what I can do.
Yeah. I think that's only, fair to yourself with all the effort you put into a career, at this point of your career too. It's you're going to find out one way or the other. And I think, it's great that, a team's been able to, as much as you appreciate the opportunities you had at Sky, it's great that a team like BMC have come forward. And I know that, back in 2012, correct me if I'm wrong, they were pretty interested in trying to get you then as well, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. Obviously, that was when Cadel was still there, and I talked with him about coming across, and, 2011, we were speaking about going across to BMC, but in the end, at the time, the best thing for me was to go to Team Sky, and I have no problems with that. Sky has been absolutely brilliant for me the last 4 years.
Yeah. Speaking, you did mention Cadel, obviously Australia's first and still only Tour de France winner, but BMC has a pretty strong flavour. It's not just Cadel, who is still with BMC as a global ambassador for the brand, the bicycle brand, but you mentioned Alan Piper before in high performance, and Rowan Dennis is really coming on, and he's had some experience in the yellow jersey now in the Tour, the leader's jersey, and young Campbell Flakemore, who started this year off really strongly at the two down, at the Nationals, and then the two down under, he crashed out, obviously, with a broken collarbone. But, do you feel that you're going into a quasi-Australian team, or is it really an international feel?
Yeah, look, I think it is more of a quasi-Australian team than most people realise. Obviously, Alan Piper's quite high up in the organisation. He's the one I've had the most to do with so far. But Rohan Dennis is, he's going to be the next big thing in Australian cycling. I think he's shown that this year in the Tour de France, winning that stage. But I sort of felt that sometimes riding the Tour and Tour Down Under was the most Aussies other than Green Edge were always wearing the BMC jerseys. So I sort of feel like, in some ways it's probably going to be more support than riding for a British team.
Yeah. Because it is, ostensibly, it is hard, isn't it? Sky have declared their sort of, that they are a British team, and they've remained pretty loyal throughout to represent British cycling in a way, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. And, I think the fact, obviously Froome's English, he's the best GC rider, so they're always going to back him. But I think in some ways professional cycling is not about the passports that you have, but I think Sky is very sort of British based, but I'm you know, the cycling boom that they've had after Brad and Chris winning Tour de France and Cavendish, you know, winning basically everything there is to win, then, you know, there is massive cycling talent here in Britain, and you know, they do need to develop it. You know, they're a British-backed team, so I understand that. But, you know, for an Australian, I feel that, you know, I did need to leave to, you know, not just ride the Giro for myself, but to ride the Tour de France. I did have to look.
Yeah. Now, with Froome, obviously a lot of people know that you guys are good mates. In his two wins, you've had a very crucial role in those victories, and specifically on two occasions, and on the same mountain, Alpe d'Huez, which I guess we're not going to next year. But back in 2013, when he had Hunger Flat on Alpe d'Huez, you got those gels for him. And then this year on Alpe d'Huez, an absolutely stunning ride to help him there. Are you able to sort of tap into what you know are his weaknesses and use them to your advantage now? And if so, will that be hard for you to sort of, I guess, cross the line in that friendship?
Yeah, because, I mean, I think everybody has, you know, bad days, but it's just more obvious when he's often in the yellow jersey when he does. But the thing that I've learnt riding so close to Chris is that he doesn't really have many weaknesses, but you know, 2013 up to it, that was a mistake on his behalf, which he's never made since. But mm-hmm. then this year, people don't realise just how sick that Froome was that day. But you know, I'd never exploit you know, Chris in any situation. He's a good mate, but you know, I think it's but a lot of other guys are going to have bad days as well. So mm-hmm. You know, you've got to take the opportunities, but. It's a shame that Alpe d'Huez isn't in there. It's you know, one of the best stages of the Tour de France you could ride, but I'm sure, you know, if it's not next year, it will be in there in 2017.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, I know you've been asked this a lot, Richie, about, you know, you're going to be, you know, riding with TJ Van Garder and the American cyclist who's twice come fifth in the Tour. And I know you said you've spoken to him about, you know, how you guys are going to handle that leadership role and how the race itself will, you know, will, I guess it always does at the end. It works out who's the stronger of the two on the day or on that tour. But in your discussions, have you been able to talk sort of, you know, quite in depth about the potential challenges of that relationship, or have you just spoken about how, you know, well, we'll just see how it goes?
Look, yeah, obviously the road decides all of that, but, you know, it's been great that, you know, TJ did pick up the phone and you know, to me about it, but, I mean, it's not you know, uncommon that there are two guys going for general classification, and we've seen it with Brad and Froome. We know how that worked out, but then there's also Quintana and Valverde they were second and third this year in the Tour. So I think TJ and I are pretty good friends, you know, off the bike, and I'm sure we can deal with it. I mean, it's also easier to have two guys there because it is, you know, all the stress one guy, and you know, I think at the end of the day, Sky are always going to ride as they do, which is take it on, and you know, that it also makes it easier from you know, a point of view that you don't need so many guys in the mountains. So I think that TJ and I will be, you know, just fine.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And I guess it comes down to being honest, doesn't it? You know, which is, it sounds simple. I know it's not always that easy in the world of professional sport, but if you can at least start with a base premise of being honest with each other, that's as good as a start you'll guess you'll get.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm mad enough to tell, you know, TJ if I'm not on a good one, and I'd expect that he's exactly the same with me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, the Tour de France, like, you know, I understand is your main goal for the year, which I understand will mean you wouldn't do the Giro as well. But have you actually sat down, or have you had a chance to sit with Alan Piper and or Jim Ockwitz to sort of strategize in detail your season and when it will start and what the earlier goals may be for the year for you?
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah, in the part, so I'm going to sit down with those guys on the 2nd of November and sort of work out my plan. But, you know, I'm going to be in Australia late December, so obviously I'll start either Nationals or Tour Down Under, which is, you know, exciting to start with your new team in your home country.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, how will you and Roman go in the Nationals? I mean, the time trial, I guess, will be, it's mano a mano there, but I mean, in the Tour Down Under, will it be a case of, you know, giving or allowing, we'll see how Roman is to defend his title, or would you still like to jag the title?
Well, I'd love to jag the title. You know, it's obviously when you're walking up into the Hilton there in Adelaide, you know, I'd love to have my name on the on one of those steps as a beauty swinner. But, you know, I think obviously this season I was sort of started down under in really good shape. But I'm not so sure that I'll be in as good a shape next year. I think with my goals being more July, I think I'll probably be a little, you know, not quite as fit, but I'd still love to win Woolunga. One of the last 2 years, so, you know, I'd love to win it three times in a row. That'd be quite a nice little hat-trick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if, I guess it'd be probably a historic hat-trick as well.
I mean, to be honest, I think that one day shows just the strength of Australian cycling, you know, the support that we have up that climb. It feels like you are riding up, you know, any of the cols in the Tour de France. The atmosphere up there is just that good.
Yeah, yeah. And Richard, during the year leading up to the Tour, obviously, I guess you'll have moments you want to sort of get those performance indicators. You know, obviously this year, you know, you're winning a lot of races. Do you feel that in 2016 there may be less, say, need to have to win races? I mean, I'm sure you'll win them if you can, but is it more like you just want to have that steady, consistent build-up of form leading to July rather than to say this year where you were winning races? And I guess you also had to sort of reaffirm your leadership for the Giro, you know, that where you were going to be leading Sky for the first time.
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously you always like to win races like Paris-Nice and Catalunya. I think it's possible to sort of target, you know, Paris-Nice or Catalunya, but also then in August we've got the Olympics next year, and that's a massive goal for me. So, you know, I don't think it's easy to qualify for Australia there, but to be honest, I'd probably prefer to be, you know, absolutely flying for, you know, July, August, rather than in February, March, like I was this year. I think, you know, it's a lot more of an incentive to take it easy at the start of the year and as easy as you can.
Yeah.
You know, you still have to get UCI points, which you do get by winning, you know, these stage races. So, you know, it's, I guess we'll find out more in November when my race program's made official.
Yeah, yeah, and at least then you can, next year you can make that steady build-up where you can also maintain your health. You know, you could be healthy, really healthy and really strong. You know, so if there are days where you're a little bit crook in other races, it's not going to be, you know, you may have to, you know, ease up a bit now and then if you feel a tickle in the throat or something like that, because you really want to be at that top-end form for July and August.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I think there was times this year when, you know, it was obvious that I had an injury, which has, you know, since been diagnosed as something called piriformis syndrome, which if you'd asked me that this time last year, I wouldn't have had a clue what it was. But, you know, I've been struggling with that for most of the year, but then I knew I was in great shape, so I just kept pushing it. And, you know, that's something that I'd rather not have to do next year, and I don't see that I will have to.
Well, Dr. Port, I understand. It's you know, you've got a lot of stuff happening, and I know you're a busy guy, and you're about to go and hit the road soon. Like I said earlier before the break, that you're in Yorkshire now, but you're going to be making your way up the road to Lancashire, and I believe in your company will be Gemma, who your fiancée, and the big day, your marriage, is looming. 9 days away as we speak, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of, you know, nice to have to do in the off-season. He's getting married, so I'm looking forward to that. You know, I think that will be certainly going to help for next year, you know, having a much more balanced personal life, having a wife, and it's just that at the moment, looking out the window, the weather's not really playing its part. And being the UK, I don't expect it to be any better than it is today.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a great time for you, Richie, and, you know, we wish you all the very, very best, and I know a lot of people here in Australia will be thinking of you next year, raising a glass. I will be, certainly, and we wish you and Gemma all the very, very best, mate, and have a great day, and also thanks for talking to us on What a Ride, and all the best. We'll see you when you get down to Oz, but in the moment, stay safe, stay healthy, and enjoy the big day next week.
Thanks very much. It's much appreciated.
You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee, and you were just listening to Richie Porte, the co-leader with TJ Van Garderen of the American BMC team for 2016 and on. Well, Aaron, I thought that was a pretty engaging, I wouldn't say conversation because I was the other part of it, but certainly some interesting comments by Richie there, and you can tell that he's pretty pumped for this year and looking at it from a positive frame mind because he understands the delicate nature of being a co-leader, I think, and I can only just wish him and TJ all the very best that they can, you know, work it out well, and they both end the season or the Tour de France not just as good mates, but with some good results to celebrate.
We saw Richie come into 2015 as focused as he has ever been. The thing about Richie is 2015 didn't necessarily go to his plans. Now, he rides with a new team, a team that he's a competitor going into the Tour de France with TJ Van Garderen, a rider, an American rider, 3 years younger than Porte. I don't know TJ well enough to know just how competitive he is as an individual, but you and I both know how competitive Richie Porte is, and I'm still not convinced on that on the strategy with BMC going in with two leaders. But I am convinced that there's no more heart and no more determination than anyone than Richie Porte.
Yeah, it'll be interesting also to see, you know, he did say how, you know, he wasn't going to be starting this season on that form you spoke of that he had in the beginning of 2015 because, I guess, first up, you know, his program, which, since I should clarify, since that interview, he has confirmed his program, his race program for this year. Obviously, he's not doing the Giro d'Italia. You know, after the Australian program, he'll be doing Paris-Nice, and then he will lead into Catalunya again, which he won last year, Tour de Romandie, Dauphiné, Criterium to Dauphiné, and then the Tour de France. That's pretty much his program, a similar one to TJ Van Garderen. And Van Garderen is going to do Tirreno Adriatico. But anyway, what I was saying is that it's going to be, he's going to have more of a steady lead into a peak, a hopeful peak in July and for August, the Olympic Games. So, whereas this last year he came in all guns firing, and so now he's going to have a steadier lead in, and I hopefully that means he's going to be healthier for longer at that crunch period of the year.
It's hard to talk about BMC and not talk about Rowan Dennis, especially in the month of January. You talk about someone who performed outside himself last year in the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season. Rowan Dennis certainly did. And I also want to get your thoughts about one young Campbell Flaymore who decided to call it quits, if there's any updates on that.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I mean, obviously on Rowan, I mean, what a year he had last year. And it's interesting, I read an interview, he said recently, not quote unquote, but just paraphrasing, basically he said he saw there were still areas he was disappointed with in his season. So it shows how much he's a high achiever, whereas, you know, we all see him, understandably, he had a fantastic year and achieved some great results on the track with his hour record and on the road. And I think particularly with his time trial win in stage one of the Tour de France, which got him a day in the yellow jersey, and then in the team time trial, we could see all these great moments he had, but he still sees some of the disappointments, and he wants to fill, I guess, the gap between the successes and win more races. So he's certainly seeking high, and I think he sees himself as a Grand Tour contender in a few years' time, and justifiably so, I think. Now, as for Campbell Flakemore, I remember we saw him at the beginning of last year, and remember, Aaron, when he was riding, you know, that his first race for BMC was with Cadel Evans. His first race in Cadel Evans' near last race, well, it was at the Tour Down Under after the National professionals. But it was very exciting to see such a wide-eyed, keen, and obviously a very strong rider, then the reigning under 23 time trial world time trial champion. But obviously he, you know, it wasn't just for him. His debut year of life as a pro in Europe just wasn't for him, and you know, credit to him for making the decision, which would have been a harsh decision, to return and not pursue that career for now, at least. I think it's, you know, it's a lot harder than people realise over there, and just because you've got a great you're a superb athlete and everything doesn't mean you're necessarily got the full makeup to be able to embrace life as a professional cyclist in Europe, particularly for an Australian. You know, I think, you know, the best main thing for Campbell now is just to get back to doing what he wants to do, and you never know, that flame may come back up again, and he may want to race again. But as far as what if he's changed his mind or not, I haven't heard anything. But certainly it'd be nice to see him around the road. Hopefully if he's smiling, that's the main thing, and he's enjoying his life.
Any predictions with the Nationals coming up this week? Do you have any?
Oh, look, for the women's race, you know, like, well, we spoke about Gracie Elvin before, didn't we? You know, I mean, she's going to be in the mix, isn't she? And you know, Orica
is the defending champion, Pina Mullins, is she racing?
Yeah, she's racing. She actually raced the Crit Series, you know, and she was up and amongst it, you know. So I think she'll be, you know, she's had a good year of solid year of racing, you know, obviously on the fat tires of mountain biking, and saw a great picture of her the other day saying, where she put it on her Facebook saying, I don't often get to ride on the skiddy tires, but when I do, you know, I give it something, or something like to that effect. She was attacking anyway, so obviously she's going to be, you know, she'll be giving it a good shake to defend that jersey, and I think, but you know, with Orica AIS, they're going to have a very strong team, aren't they? And they're going to be very hard to beat. But Peter Mullins did it last year, didn't she? So who says it can't happen again?
Now, that said, too, Rube, on the men's side, Heinrich Hausler, check the Tour Down Under website. I'm on it now. I'm looking at the IM Cycling team roster for the TDU. Heinrich's not on that list. His compatriots, Lee Howard and David Tanner. Lee Howard coming over from Orca. But Heinrich's not there. Any news on Hausler?
No, I haven't, unfortunately. You caught me on the hop there. Good on you. No, I haven't. I think, you know, maybe I can't speak for his behalf. Maybe, I'm just thinking, maybe he's thinking of not wanting to come and have a, you know, come to Australia where he's expected to be on early top form, and then maybe fall into a dip later. Maybe he wants to start a bit later and have a bit more of a steady lead into the year and try and be solid through the Classics campaign and into the rest of his program. You know, it's you know, a lot of Australian riders do find, you know, because they're Australian and they come down here and the competition down here and the racing's so hard now, if you want to be in the race, you've got to be race fit for it, and you have to be at an early peak. And some riders, you know, find adjusting to that quite hard. And maybe Heinrich is thinking, maybe I'll just rather focus on the European season this year. You know, he had his year, you know, wearing the national champion's jersey. That experience alone would have been fantastic. But I'm sure he's got his mind, his goals are further ahead. And for guys like David Tanner and Lee Howard, I mean, it's a great opportunity for them to sort of leave their imprint on their new team and to, you know, restore the faith that the team's put into them by signing them up.
Already been a great start to the season. You mentioned Pat Shaw at the Bay Crits. Very impressed with him, what the old man is doing. Was quite impressed with young Britton Jones with Drapac, showing a couple of podium places there as well. He's obviously moved into that sprinter role, that number one sprinter role, with the absence of Walter Whippet, who's gone on to Cannondale. So it looks like he's going to do quite well. And I'm very excited looking ahead, past the Nationals, to the Tour Down Under and Team Dimension Data, formerly MTN Quebeca, to see Cameron Meyer and Nathan Haas and Mark Renshaw team up with Tyler Farrar and see what the guys from the rest of the guys over there in South Africa can do.
Yeah. No, it's going to be exciting year. So I think, you know, what we should do, Aaron, though, we better wrap it up, because it's been an engaging chat with us, at least. And I think it just shows how much is happening in the world of cycling, isn't it? You know, and we didn't even get into triathlon on this show. We've got to talk about the Hawaii Ironman, but maybe we can give another week's reflection and come back to that. We'll look ahead to the season to come for Ironman and triathlon as well.
Absolutely. Of course, it is indeed Olympic year. We talked about it. It's Rio 2016. There's going to be a lot to talk about in athletics as well.
Okay, Aaron. Well, one last question for you before you go and before we wrap it up. What are you planning for the next couple of weeks? Where can we expect to hear from you? Or should I be, you know, wondering, expecting a knock on the door here back in Sydney?
You know, one thing you know about me, Rupe, you never know anything about me. I very well could be right now still in New Orleans, loving life, and just absolutely excited to be kicking off another season of What a Ride, and obviously another season of pro cycling and triathlon.
That's great, Aaron. It's always great to hear from you, and hopefully we'll see you down there at the TDU, the Tour Down Under, which will be in Adelaide, South Australia, from January 16th. To January 24, I've got my dates right. But first up, we've got the National Championships. When we hear from us again, for all of you out there listening to What a Ride, we'll be able to talk back, reflect back on the National Championships to see how they unfolded or not, and see how correct or wrong Aaron and I were. But thanks for listening to us once again. Hope you all had a very Merry Christmas. Wish you all a happy and safe New Year. Remember, stay safe out there. A meter matters. What a ride. Happy New Year. And thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening to us. That's goodbye from myself and Aaron.
Lift me into shape.